Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us again as we go through our various adventures with fascinating people. And tonight's guest is extremely fascinating. St. Susan Baltoser is a shaman who does fascinating work. But from my perspective, since I always want to tell you about the path, she has studied all over the world. So we're going to have some very interesting insights and stories. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I was wondering, you know, what can I talk about? And the classic thing to talk about when you don't know what to talk about is the weather. And did you notice the weather is a little strange? Everybody is talking about how warm it is, you know, how all kinds of things are really odd. Many of us are having conversations with the trees going, no, no, don't bud this week. We're just kidding. It's not really going to be that warm for long. Obviously, things have shifted. But the other piece that's going on this week, and some of us hear about this all the time and think about it, and other people don't. There are several things that are affecting the way electronic equipment functions, but also the way relationships function and the way our brains function. So one of the things is that, in you can see me doing air quotes, Mercury is retrograde. What does that mean? Astrologically, Mercury is moving in the opposite direction of something or other. And because of that, what is understood to happen consistently is communication is affected, and all kinds of communication. So that can include emails not going through, can include misunderstandings, contracts not being arranged in appropriate ways. Why does that happen? I don't know. Astrologers know about that stuff. But it happens over and over again. There's part of me that says, let's stop scapegoating Mercury. This stuff happens periodically all the time. It's not that big a deal, folks. On the other hand, you need to notice the kinds of cycles in nature, and astrology is looking at one kind of cycle. The other thing that's going on that most people, if you don't follow this kind of stuff, are really not looking at is the effect of the sun and the extraordinary amount of energy that's being put out in solar flares at a very high level, higher than has happened in, well, it's an 11-year cycle, but this is the highest that they've ever recorded. So we're getting all of this energy projected at us. And it takes 3 to 4 days for the energy of a solar flare to get here. And it's all kinds of things. It's a magnetic field. It's photons. It's plasma, which is superheated gas. All this stuff coming at us. And it literally takes the magnetic field of the Earth and the protection around the Earth and pushes it aside, makes it less useful as a protection for us. And every one of us is getting affected by this very, very high level of energy. And that also can mess with satellites and all kinds of electronic equipment. The cool thing is it also makes the northern lights brighter and tends to make them come further south. So people that never see them are seeing them now. Now, what does that mean to you? Who cares? David's doing his weird stuff. Well, when your equipment doesn't work or some other communication is not happening or you're physically being affected, I know for me and a lot of other healers that I'm talking to lately, there are just days when we can't work. We're very sensitive people. We're sensitive to energy. We might not know exactly what's getting to us, but there will be days when we're fuzzy-headed or we just can't get going or we try to work and can't stay focused. And that's true for people that are doing every kind of work, you know, office work, anything else. But for people that are really sensitive and using that sensitivity for their work, it can really mean you can't work today and tomorrow and maybe for a few days. And that's just an exaggerated, if you will, version of what's going on for everybody. The sun's activity is part of what's changing on the Earth. It's what's changing in the whole solar system. And our vibration is being shifted we're getting more energy, higher frequency energy. There are all kinds of names for this phenomenon. And that comes with a whole package of changes. You know, you feel like you're getting the flu, you're tired, there's all kinds of things that go on. And so I'm just suggesting once again that in looking at the world like a shaman, that you tune into all these forces of nature and say, oh, something is going on here. This is not how I usually feel. How can I work with this? How can I acknowledge it? How can I move through it without just beating myself up for being tired today or being having memory problems or whatever the unusual, I don't know why this is happening thing is going on for you. So something else to think about. And that was today's metaphysical musing. And now I'm really looking forward to talking to St. Susan Baltoser. Susan, you with us?
I am.
And we got to chat for just a couple of minutes. And of course, the first thing that I asked was for you to tell our audience the story of why you get to be called a saint. Because how many people get to do that, especially while they're alive?
Yeah, that is it's a good story. For many years, I was an artist, and I still am an artist, but I actively worked as an artist. And I was working doing some artwork about angels and saints and things like that when I was younger. I loved the spiritual from the first day I popped onto the planet. So I was doing this artwork, and I was working with a bunch of women who were they were in recovery. And we went through a whole bunch of spiritual work where we talked about, you know, who we were and how our recovery had actually helped us to, you know, transcend some of the boundaries that we had before. So then after that, I had done these interviews and taken photographs, and I made these shrines to these women and myself and put them out in Boston's Combat Zone. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a place where there's a lot of prostitution at one point, and it was pretty notorious as a place where a lot of bad stuff happened in Boston. So we put these shrines up, and they were great. They were these shrines that had a power object that the women felt helped them to overcome their circumstances and things like that. So it was great. And we had hundreds of people come, and the news came, the 6 o'clock news, and they ran up to me with their microphone, which I hate being on microphone in front of, you know, a camera. It just makes me crazy. And they were like, so this is St. Susan Baltoser. And, of course, every single one of my friends was there or was watching the news or whatever. So I got dubbed Saint Susan, and it just stuck because everybody would call me that, you know. And that's how it got to be my name for a long period of time. I don't use it as much as I used to, but it was really a name that everybody thought was appropriate for some reason, maybe because I did spiritual work, but...
Well,
I don't levitate or anything, but not in real world.
Some of us are, you know, going for sainthood with the various things that we do. But, you know, it's always nice to meet someone who's achieved it.
yeah, exactly. I'm so saintly sometimes.
I'm
floating away as we speak.
Well, we'll try and hold you down so you can talk to our audience. So... give us an idea of the kinds of stuff that you're doing now, but also how you got there, because you're doing some intense shamanic work, and you've more than paid your dues. You've paid your dues many times over in many traditions all over the world, and to you, it's just your background, and you know, I'm sure you're sitting there shrugging your shoulders going, oh, do I have to tell the stories again?
That's fine. I understand why I need to tell those stories. It's important for people to realize those stories, David. You and I both know that.
Right. And, you know, part of it is one of the things I realized when I first started doing this show is people look at someone who does amazing work and thinks, first of all, I could never do that. And secondly, oh, they must have been born that way, or, you know, they just were in the right place at the right time and they learned it, or whatever their story is about how It just happens spontaneously. And they don't know the decades of challenge and dedicated work and confusion and all the rest. All the rest of the twists and turns in the path, and that's part of the story that I want people to get is, you know, this is just a way of living, and everybody on this path has their version of the story.
Right, exactly. I agree. Well, we can go back. The first experiences I had was when I was really young. My family practiced the occult, and so I was 7 years old, and I was around situations where there was a lot of crazy stuff going on with seances and all that. And I did have some abilities at a young age, but I think that what that experience that for many years in my childhood with my parents playing with, you know, whatever you want to call it, the psychic world, and their neighbors and everything, my whole neighborhood did this, so we call it the Hill Group. But I think what that did was it helped me to see that people can play with this kind of stuff, and it can be difficult, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so as I started to get older and really, you know, I was intrigued by Carlos Castaneda and all these different people that I read about, but I had this background with this family, you know, not to demonize them or anything, but, you know, they were just doing what they were doing, playing. But I realized at that point in time that, you know, this wasn't really play. This was something that was very powerful. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my childhood, I was scared. So when I got older, I decided that if I really wanted to do this, I really needed to do it the right way and learn from people who had integrity and, you know, knew what they were doing. They weren't playing. So I worked with many, 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 many healers. Some of them, the way my inroad was with a woman who was a Barbara Brennan teacher. She taught at the school, and she did some healing work on me because of the trauma from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I really admired and liked about her was her groundedness and the fact that she had studied a tradition. And it, you know, it's not an easy path as far as, you know, what she had done. And we did a lot of work together, both, her doing healing work on me, but also she had classes and things like that in her home. So there was, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years with her where we just, as a small group of people, got together and practiced with her. And every single week, you know, we had assignments to do, and we worked together doing all sorts of things that had to do with healing and work on ourselves. The most important thing that she used to stress was that we needed to do a lot of work on ourselves so that we could heal some of our wounds and bring in a light so that when we were assisting others in their own healing, that they, we wouldn't be bringing any extracurricular things. You know, we weren't going
right.
We were clean and clear so that we could really bring them energy of light to someone. So that was my introduction. And then from there, I worked with some people who did some Michael Harner stuff in the very beginning. And that was interesting to me. It was good. It was a good basis and stuff. But I really was really loving and wanting. I wanted more than just shamanic journey. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But even at that point in my younger years, I saw that it was kind of terrible to say. But it's a distilled version of shamanism. It's still like one step removed. It's just one step removed from the basic earthiness of the real people who do the work every single day.
Right.
And that's what I loved about my childhood was, you know, I was the kid who was, you know, working with the ants and burying my animals, and I had tons of animals, and I was always taking care of them, and I was taking care of my family and all sorts of different things. So that was that was the start. I just realized I needed to find teachers who were really grounded in their own land. And that's one of the things that I feel really, really strongly about as a teacher is that, you know, wherever you live, you need to be grounded in your land. You need to be grounded and notice what's going on around you, what kind of animals and plants are around you and, you know, weather patterns and all things like that, so that you really understand your world and that it can start to communicate with you. And I think that my art helped me with that because the language, to me, the language of nature and shamanism is really not about word. It's more about feeling. It's more about visual. It's about understanding a visual, emotional language.
Right.
So from there, it was, you know, I went to India. I did some John Perkins things. I met the Dalai Lama in India. We studied with his teachers, and we were there for about a month.
You say that in such an offhanded way.
It was profound.
I bet.
No, it was really profound. It was really profound, and it was really hard work also, because India is not an easy place to be. But because of the fact that I didn't even, you know, like I've never wanted to go to India, but I loved the Dalai Lama. I always wanted to meet him, and. It was one of those trips where I knew I had to go, but I didn't really want to. Have you ever had one of those, David?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
You know, it's like, you know, I've had quite a few of those where you know you have to go for some reason. You don't even really know consciously why, but your body does.
Right, right.
So I did. I went to India, and I had some pretty extraordinary experiences. You know, meeting the Dalai Lama is great, but...
Yeah, most people don't really understand that Tibetan Buddhism is a shamanic tradition.
It totally is a shamanic tradition.
Yeah, very powerful shamanic tradition.
Very powerful, very connected to the land and being in your body. So when I was there in India, it was my first real big world trip. And I had like very little money, and I went, and John Perkins happened to be the person who was the leader of the trip, and you know, it was a pretty good sized group, but we went and we went and had healings with different healers, and then we, like I said, we met the Dalai Lama, we had a private audience, and the working with the teachers was amazing, but the thing that they were saying to us was you really need to, you know, get connected to the land, get connected to your own land, learn your own language with spirit. And I, on that trip, something opened in me that was very profound. I was walking away from one of the monasteries, the Hemus Monastery, which is a pretty famous monastery there. And we had been allowed to... we had been allowed to meditate in any part of the monastery we wanted to go. So I, you know, walked around and I checked out the energy of the place and I sat down in this long, narrow room with yak butter offerings in front of me, that were these gorgeous, beautiful pieces of artwork. And there was this delicious-looking box. It was this wooden box with some cushions in it, and I decided I was going to sit in that box because it just felt right. And all these young monks that were, you know, like 12 to 20 years old came running in and they were laughing at me. And I'm like, why are they laughing? And some of them could speak English. And they said to me, you know, that's the master's chair. And they started laughing hysterically. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you know, we believe you're the reincarnation of la, 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 la. And I'm like, why? Because I'm sitting in this chair. It was weird. Okay. And they asked me if I would pray for them, and I prayed for them for about a minute, and then they took out their books, and it was a half an hour of prayers that they did for me, and I always felt a little bad that they could. But so that was pretty profound, and then when I left there after that, I was leaving the monastery itself, and this has happened to me quite a few times, but the reality, the everyday reality that you see as you're walking out of some place, was a very barren landscape. It was the foothills of the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see the everyday reality. Another reality took over, and I looked down at my feet, and they weren't the feet that I knew my body was. And I was this other person. And I was sobbing, and I had this experience of seeing different monks, these wonderful monks that I had been sent there when I was a young boy and had worked my way up to being, you know, a teacher there, and then had been sent out to start a new monastery. And that had been my whole life. I had never known anything else. And it wasn't like it was a story that I made up in my head. This is something that completely took over my body, and I couldn't see the regular reality, you know, the everyday reality. And the people around me, luckily John Perkins and the other people around me, were very, very adept at knowing that, you know, things were happening for people. So they helped me. And basically, I just had to lay there for a long time, sobbing mm-hmm. into the river. And then the rest of the trip was pretty profound, too. You know, I had a few healings and stuff, but that was, I felt like I completed something there, and that kind of took me in a direction that was very interesting. Yeah.
And I know you, just from reading a little bit in your biography, you've also studied, did you go to Africa with Mao Doma Same?
I did not. That's one thing that I want to do. I want to work, I would like to go see Credo Mudwa, actually. No, I worked with Maladoma in the United States. He teaches he teaches all over the place, but mm-hmm. he has the East Coast Village out in near Western Mass. It's over the border in New York State, where he has land with a gentleman owns the land, but he goes there and he teaches on a regular basis. It's a he teaches right there. I think he teaches other places, but. That's where I did the work that I did with him, which was, you know, a year long, more than a year long, because we did a bunch of things before that. But that was the work that I did with Maladoma. Sort of, I had done a lot of work where I would work one-on-one with myself or with other people. And when I was much younger, I worked on more of a communal level. And in my artwork, it was always very communal. I did large-scale installations and, you know, things like that. So the thing that I loved about Maladoma was that he really brought in the perspective of a tribal culture where the whole community is taken into account. Everybody has a job and a place spiritually in the group. So we would do very large ceremonies based on the five elements of the cosmology. And these incredible, delicious, wonderful rituals that would be, some of them would be radical rituals where you're burying somebody in the ground.
Right.
Which I've taken part in that many times in different traditions. But, you know, fire rituals, water rituals, mineral rituals, you know, all the rituals, nature rituals. And what was great about those was it taught me a lot about the... more than teach, it gave me a language for the work that I had done before. I always thought my artwork was more ritualistic, and so did many people that I worked with. They thought, you know, these are really rituals that you're doing. So it's kind of nice to be able to work with Maladoma and realize, oh, I've been doing this my whole life. I just didn't know the structures that other cultures did it in.
So. We're coming up on our break.
Yep.
So we'll pick the story up because it's fascinating, and we'll also give the call-in number so that if people want to ask questions or join the conversation, they can. Give people your website so they can find you.
Sure. It's www.spiritsofnaturehealing.com.
Great. And we'll make sure that you get to do that again.
Okay,
we will be back in just a few minutes after these messages here on Empower Radio with the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere.
A bright future starts with a healthy lifestyle.
Pinocchio, I'm a real boy.
Good nutrition and physical activity are fuel for your child's mind and body.
Now you're talking.
And the food pyramid will help you find the right balance of everything you and your child need. Grains, vegetables, fruits, oils, milk, and meats and beans.
Nothing can stop me now.
Just remember, smart choices from every food group, along with the right amount of physical activity, can put everyone on the path to better health.
Look, the wishing star.
You don't have to make a wish for a healthier you to come true. Just eat right.
Here's an apple.
Be active.
Come on, I'll race you home.
And make it balance.
Attaboy, Pinocchio.
A healthy lifestyle can lead to great things for you and your child. Visit MyPyramid.gov to learn more. That's MyPyramid.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org. and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Fire at the Shed.
Gee, Johnny, this rope swing sure is swell. Don't I know it. Hey, it's Sassy! I think she's trying to tell us something. Mr. Gunderson? What about Mr. Gunderson? A fire? Mr. Gunderson's trapped? Where, Sassy? Where? What, Sassy? Now that you've got our attention, you'd like to take a moment to talk about shelter pets? Shelter pets in general are well-adjusted, healthy, and love being with people? Sassy, we don't have time! Pets often end up in shelters due to owner problems like divorce or allergies. That's great, Sassy, but what about the fire? There is no fire. You're just messing with our heads. Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. I love the Sassy public service announcements because Sassy is such what we would call in shamanism a coyote. She's always tricking them into something. And they're just hysterical. So let's give out the number for people to call in if they would like to join the conversation. It's 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. We're going to continue our wonderful conversation with St. Susan Baltazar. And when last seen, you were studying with Maladoma Somme, the African shaman, somewhere off in New York State.
Yep. I've also extensively worked with Don Jorge and Don Esteban Tamayo from Ecuador, mm-hmm. as well as the Mayan healers, Machete and Gerardo Barreras. Mercedes lived in north of Boston for a long time, so I worked with her, Lakota Hasey in Virginia, all these different people. David, the thing is, you know, I have been a dog soldier. We talked about this briefly, but I have been a dog soldier for a long, long time. And
so explain what a dog soldier is.
A dog soldier is someone who, you know, kind of chops wood, carries water, mm-hmm. Basically assists, do your work on your own, learn from the teacher, but also you assist them a long time before you get to do anything, before you get to do any healing work. You're always practicing helping them and learning directly from them by being by their side and doing the work. And that could be, you know, handing them implements to work with or just holding space, which is something that is so important. People just don't really get how important that is. But, getting things for them so that their work can be easy. Being there for people when they are receiving their healing and they are having difficulties. Holding the light when people get nervous and scared. Catching people if they fall over, things like that. So just being there, just practice, but...
It's the classic apprenticeship situation.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so important. It's so important. And one of the things that I've been realizing even more as I get older is how important that practice is, I lead nature walks all the time. And I'm out in nature all the time. And it's so interesting to me when I start working with people, in a teacher-student kind of environment and go on a nature walk. And it's really sweet and wonderful because, you set an intention and you go out on a walk and all of a sudden people start to see things that they didn't realize that they've been there all the time, but they didn't realize it. Right. And what I love about working with newer people is their enthusiasm and excitement because they're seeing these things for the first time. I think it's really important that we get connected to our own land. It has been very powerful working with people from different places in the world and learning their traditions. But all my teachers have told me that one of the most important things that we can do is learn our own land. And once being initiated into a tradition and learning and practicing and being that dog soldier and just assisting is to... find your own way in, and that comes after time. And you start, this day you start to find your own way. And at this point in my life, I love to travel. I'm going to continue to travel, and I'm sure I'm going to continue working with Indigenous healers because I love to do that. But I also feel that it's really important for me to work with my own land and my own ancestors that I, are part of my family and my land itself. I grew up in Braintree, Massachusetts, but that doesn't mean there's not wisdom keepers there that have tread that earth. So that's another thing that I'm really feeling really strongly about right now is finding the wisdom in my own ancestors. And they're from all over the world. So do you know what I mean?
Know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it's important. It's important work. And I read a really great article that a couple of teachers wrote in I don't even remember the name of the magazine, but they were talking about we want to go, we're so seduced and excited, and of course it makes sense. I always wanted to meet the Dalai Lama. I wanted to when I was a kid. But the thing that impressed me about the Dalai Lama was not that he was this ethereal being. I remember when I met him, I was kind of like excited and kind of sad all at the same time, because what I saw in front of me was this man who had obviously worked hard to get to where he was. He had done the work, but he was also really just a man, And I think that's important to know. These teachers are human, and they have frailties, and they have strengths, and they are wise, and they can be pretty dumb sometimes, too. They're just like the rest of us. And I think in our culture, because we're so starved for connection spiritually, that we... we turn a lot of our power over to them. And what I'm realizing is, and they've told me this, you have power. You have your own power. We'll give you what we can, but we want you to find your own power, find your own way. You can use our tradition, but make it your own. Do what you do,
Right. So. And that's one of the basic things about shamanism. And, you know, my joke is it's a marketing problem. you know, if you say you've been certified in a particular modality that people know, you're a Reiki yep. master, or you've been trained in certified by Barbara Brennan, people go, oh, okay, I understand this. They pay their dues in a certain way. They have a system. If you say, I've been doing this for 30 years after apprenticing for X number of years, and I can't tell you what I do because I don't know, but it gets results and people's lives improve. So based on that, do it. You know, it's really hard to.
People
are not used to that point of view, which says I've done the work and I can help you. You know, which is why I'm on my website. I've got audio testimonials because, you know, I can't get the people that know my work works together with the people that are considering it. But,
right.
the essence of all indigenous healing traditions is you do the dog soldier position, the apprenticeship position, get put into strange and completely, I don't even know how to explain it anymore. You get put into positions that nobody else would wind up in just so you can have the experience.
Exactly.
And at some point, they basically throw you out of the nest. Okay, you're ready. Go do your work. Like, what?
Exactly.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Yeah. And then you got a bunch of years. You got to work on your own.
And then you do it and it changes and you run into this and you run into that and you learn from this person, you learn from that person, and it's putting together a huge puzzle. And when enough of the puzzle pieces are together, suddenly you can do stuff that you didn't even know you could do.
Right.
And you find out, you know, what your power is, what your specialty is, but everybody wants an elevator speech or a sound bite. And that's not what shamanic healing is about.
No, it really isn't. And, you know, the funny thing is when you go to teach it, you know, a lot of people, I ran into my last year-long training that I am, it's still going on. Some of the people who, they were very new, and they were very excited about it. And, you know, I warned them that this was going to be not a linear process that we're going to be going through. You know, I'm going to give you assignment, sure, but it's not something linear. It's like, you know, a Zen master couldn't really tell you what they were going to do, and I'm not comparing myself to a Zen master at all.
Right.
But the teaching, the style of teaching really is, you know, the students, I teach to the particular students that I have, and so that may take me in one direction one time and then go in another direction another time, because I've got to assist them to be able to not only bring their strengths out in a way that they know that they're their strengths. Like, I can't give them, you know, I can tell them what their strengths are, but they have to feel it and know it deep inside themselves. And those are the kind of situations that as a teacher, I do to the best of my ability to create those environments or those rituals or those things that I have people do so that they can feel those things. Mm-hmm. They can experience them and they get, oh yeah, okay, now I understand something. I couldn't necessarily put word to it, but they get those kind of things. And those are the most powerful kinds of teachings is when they learn it from the inside out rather than, you know, like a piece of paper and a pen, you know?
But, right. And the questions that they ask because of the experiences that they've had that they're trying to understand.
Yeah. And a lot of people in our culture want techniques. And I could give you a technique, but if there's no understanding is the wrong word, but if there's no experience underneath it, a technique is just a technique. It doesn't really do anything. It's the space that somebody comes from, where they hold themselves, that holding space for another person, where you're coming. Are you sending love to a person? Are you sending light to the person? What are you What's your intention? What do you, you know, all those kind of things. You know that, David.
Yep.
I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but.
Well, but, it, you know, it's a conversation that we need to have and that, you know, is leading the audience to a different understanding. So, you know, when people ask me what my training was, I said, well, it's kind of like being thrown in the deep end of the swimming pool totally unexpectedly. And your teacher watches and goes, oh, that's good. He's not drowning.
Yep.
And then after the experience, they won't talk about it because that would be analyzing it. And it's about how it feels and understanding you can survive it and do your work. And just having that happen over and over and over again with increasing levels of strangeness.
Yeah.
So when people come to me and say, I want to do what you do, and I say, well, tell me where you are, what you've done. And it's basically, okay, you need to start 30 years ago. There's stuff you need. There's basic stuff that you need to experience that I've experienced over the last 30 years, and you're not there yet. And if I teach you what I do, you'll get hurt.
Exactly.
Because you don't have that level of integration in the stuff that you do to go into the dark stuff.
Yep.
Because you can get seriously hurt.
Yes.
And a lot of people get insulted. And it's like, no, I'm not insulting you. I'm just telling you, you know, this is the way. This is what you have to do. There's a lot you have to do. I often say to people, what's the scariest thing that happened to you? And if they can't come up with a story of really being terrified doing something, I go, okay, you're not ready.
Mm.
You know, they haven't come up against that edge of, oh, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's pretty profound, isn't it?
And that's where that's where the work is. When you're in that place of, I don't have any idea what's going on, how I'm going to get out of this, or what the solution is, and then you can stay there in that place, in your power, asking for the answer.
Yes.
Without getting forced out.
Yes. And I think that's the gift of my childhood was being in that place a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
actually
having some, you know, I think at a young age, I had some wisdom in there, you know, that I didn't realize until I was older. But, you know, I knew they weren't doing the right thing. They weren't doing ritual to, like, keep the space safe. I knew that. So some of those circumstances that I went through, a lot of those circumstances for many, many years of my young life helped me to realize how important, you know, calling in the light. You know, you could say, what is calling in the light? Well, protection is, you don't want protection after the fact. You want it there all the time.
Right.
You want to be solid. You want to be able to be in your power so you don't need to call on the light. Do you know what I mean? Because it's already there. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. I did one workshop that at the end of the workshop, we got into some very intense clearing of dark stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But of the full year of the program, a good six or 8 months was protection.
Yeah.
And she didn't take the class into that deeper space until everyone in the class was safe. And then we could all do it. And then as a group creating the protection, we could be shown the kind of stuff she wanted to show us. And it was one of those, oh, that really exists. Oh, good to know. I don't think I'll go there much, though.
That's the kind of world that I lived in when I was young.
Right.
You know, and I don't really know why I knew some of the things that I knew.
Right. Well, some of that was just exposure to it and intuition. Because, you know, you came in knowing a lot.
Yeah.
So I want to give the phone number again, just in case we have somebody lurking and they are going, what's that phone number? It's 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474 if you want to join the conversation in this last few minutes. And let's give your website again.
Okay. It's www.spiritsofnaturehealing.com.
Great. Great. And are you teaching classes or doing events right now that people should know about?
I am. I will be starting up another year-long training in the spring. We're in the spring. I'm sorry, fall. I do spring and fall. I do a year-long training once a month for an 8 or 10 hour day. I am teaching some classes. I'm moving in the next couple of months, so I'm going to be, I'm still in Boston, the Boston area, but things are on hold for a couple of months. But I do teach classes at the Arts at the Armory in Somerville.
Terrific.
And also out at Roots and Wings in Natick.
Uh-huh.
And coming to many other places around the Boston area. I took care of my parents for, four or five years, somewhere in there, while they made their transition into elder housing and things like that. So my mom had Alzheimer's and was working with her. So there was a big chunk of time when I was kind of off the radar as far as, teaching went. So now that I'm in Boston, I'm going to teach more.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
And is your artwork being shown anywhere? I know you do
right
big
now,
installations.
Yeah. Right now, no. My installation work is on hold right now. It's just on hold right now. But I am working on a set of shamanic cards, two-dimensional work. So I'm doing some artwork and doing a lot of channeling of the spiritual energies about nature. In the Dogra tradition, I'm considered a nature person, and we're the what they call the witches or the healers in the community. We're the ones that are deeply connected to nature.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I love to do is in my early morning hours of the day, I just sit there and call on the spirits of nature and see what they have to say that day. And what's nice is there's been a lot of really interesting information coming through, and I loved what you were talking about before we started talking about the energies of, the earth changes and the sun and all that. So my guides have been talking a lot about that kind of stuff also. But it was really nice to hear you talk about that. I liked it.
Well, there's the geeky side of it, the science side of it, which at least there's some information getting out there about it, except it's usually borderline hysterical. Oh my God, everything is going to crash and burn and we won't have electricity, which is a vague possibility but unlikely. But what people don't realize is how much that same energy and the many different kinds of energy that are being thrown at us are affecting us, affecting our personalities, affecting our bodies, affecting our energy, which most people don't think of, but they can relate to it as emotions and their personality and their physical body.
It's a potent time, isn't it?
The Chinese curse may live in interesting times.
Yeah, we know how to pick them, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the part of me that periodically goes, and I volunteered for this.
Yes.
Again.
I know. Oh, gosh.
Again. What was
and
I
we will
thinking?
Again, David. We will again until we do know more.
That's right. Yeah. But we get to cross paths with each other and meet more fascinating people doing the work.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really amazing people doing work today. And, it's interesting you say I know a lot of people who aren't really, they wouldn't consider themselves spiritual people. They really don't know anything about shamanism or energy healing or anything like that. But there's a lot of people saying, what the heck is going on? Not just, about the government and the money situation and all that, but just like what's going on with me personally. I'm really off. I'm getting some interesting people coming to me now because it's just, they don't know what's happening. And I love to be able to be of service in that way, to help people to go through these transitions. So it helps me to help them. I like to do it.
Yeah, and it's great that, people are reaching out to practitioners that are out of the mainstream. realizing that what's going on with them is not something that a mainstream practitioner is going to be able to understand or touch on, that there's something more going on, or something that's at least different, and that there are people that are different.
Yes.
For a reason. Yes. So.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, when you were talking about clearing, and you were talking about clearing homes and or something like that, mm-hmm. and I just had, it's so funny, I worked with this woman who's a teacher, and she was a pretty skeptical person, and her sister was, you know, a new agey kind of young woman, very nice young woman. And she said, well, let's try some shamanic healing. Let's ask St. Sue if she'll do it. And so they asked me, and they had this, I don't know, multi-million-dollar home in Boston. And the skeptical teacher, she's so cute, she's like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'll do a clearing on your house, see what happens. So I did a clearing on their house, and they've been able to sell this multi-million-dollar brownstone in 10 years. And that night, I was so proud. That night they got 3 phone calls, and they got a higher offer than they had ever gotten on the house.
That's what my work's like, and you gotta love it when it's that fast and
it's
that direct.
So it's so funny. It cracks
so
me
much
up.
Fun.
Like, yeah.
It's so much fun, and you try not to laugh. You know.
Yeah, I know exactly. You know, because for me, I think the best way to come at it is not to have expectations about it. But when that does happen, it's so fun. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're gonna have to wrap this up, but we're gonna have to do this again.
Yeah, I would love to do it again. I want to meet you in person too.
Well, we can do that. We can definitely do that. We're only 2 hours away, so we'll figure that out.
Okay.
So my wonderful guest has been St. Susan Baltoser, and your website is
www.spiritsofnaturehealing.com.
And that's where you can find all her information. Thank you so much for being with us. This has been great fun. And
it has been great fun. Thanks, David.
You're welcome. If people want to find my work, you can find it at househealing.com, houshealing.com. Go to the contact tab, and you will find all kinds of technologies that you can reach me with, including a link that lets you make a phone appointment with me, because I do a 20-minute free assessment and reading to find out what's going on and whether my work can be useful to you. So please take advantage of that. My guest next week is another fascinating healer. It's always one of those names that I stumble over, and I hate that. Yulia Cohen has done all kinds of different work. She's an energy healer, medical intuitive, a therapist. She's created her own healing technique called the Energy Restructuring System. I think we're going to have a fantastic time talking to her and finding out about her work. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to is the Farkas Files is going to be rebroadcast on a local radio station for the first time. So we're not only going to be online, but we're going to be on the air, which is going to be very exciting. So until next week, please be back with us next Thursday at 9:00 here on Empower Radio. This is David Franklin Farkas with the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere.